You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. you gonna do?
Do you think
it all? Yeah. The
government cares about
you. Ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome. Hey, sorry about that. Good morning, African world. I was thinking I was like already at the halftime of the program. Good morning. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, I hope everything was well with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Juneteenth Day. Father's Day, a lot of activities. Hope you were safe. Hope you, if you were out and about, you had your mask on. And you've seen what is happening across the country. You know, so I hope you're staying safe. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things. I hope you got a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope everything was cool for you to do it. And if it was better for you to just chill, you did that. Yep, you did that. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. You cannot listen to this program live. You can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top, you'll see the different links, and one link, of course, is podcast. Click on that, and you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This evening, Monday, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad. Followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. Tuesdays, if it's Tuesday, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. on Fridays. Saturday. Black Reality Think Tank, weekend edition from 4 to 6. The Black Reality Think Tank weekend edition is from 4 to 6, and then followed by Black Reality Think Tank. The Elders Circle. Let me get that right. That's right. The Elders Circle on Saturdays from 6 to 8. From 6 to 8. The Elder Circle. And didn't get a chance to listen this past Saturday. I was out and about a lot on Saturday. It was cool. Beautiful program for the rites of passage for brothers, young brothers and sisters. You know, each year is always great. Always great to see those young brothers and sisters step up into their manhood, into their womanhood, and begin to be responsible and be serious warriors for our people, as they say. That's great. Oh, Sunday, on Sunday, at 7 p.m. It's time for an awakening with, once again, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And a number to call. Oh, man, I keep forgetting stuff here. Let me get my act together. Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. It's the Warren Valentine Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And now the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Please go to the website and check out all of the products that they have there. I'm quite sure there will be something there that you will take a liking to, and hopefully that you will send in and purchase, okay? Yep, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bamani Taimba has been taking our people to the continent for many years. Africa for the Africans. I really love what he has done. I really appreciate all the things that he has done and continues to do. His upcoming trip, you know, he had a number of tours scheduled, but because of what is going on, he had to delay them or reschedule them. And so one of the reschedulings is South Africa, November 20th through the 30th. November 20th through the 30th, going to South Africa, $3,700. Then in December, December 24th through January 5th, 2021, Ghana, going to Ghana, and that's also for $3,700. Brothers and sisters, you make a down payment and you pay on it. By the time those two trips rolls around in November and December, it'll have been paid and you are off. You are ready to go for a trip of a lifetime. And when you go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, everything that you need for that trip is there. All the paperwork, all the visa informations, shots and so forth, where to get them and what you need. All that information is there. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Renoka Rashidi's trips are coming up towards the end of the year, October 5th through the 16th, going to Uganda and Rwanda. October 5th through the 16th, Uganda and Rwanda. And then October 22nd, he's going to Kemet. He's going to Kemet. October 22nd through November 4th, going to Kemet. Both of those trips are about $4,200. So check them out. Uganda and Rwanda. Man, it sounds good. Habesha. HabeshaIncorporated.org. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad in Teaching Our People. Habesha Incorporated, brothers and sisters, they deserve to be supported. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. They are doing the work. The Kashi Project is underway. They still need the funding. Brothers and sisters, you can help. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall is open Monday through Saturday, 12 to 7, I believe it is, and then on Sunday, 12 to 5. If you're looking for a book, give them a call at 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, and Mama Nia, she will help you out finding what you need. Okay, believe me, if it's not there and she doesn't have it, she'll get it. That's the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Kazimde Ajamu, and he has what you need as well. Give him a call at 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. Brothers and sisters, there is light in the Black Dot. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right across the street from Soul Veg, right up the street from Shrine of the Black Madonna
and the West End Mall. It's right there for you. They have products from We Buy Black. That's right. They got the soap, the tissue, the laundry detergent, the laundry detergent. They got, they got it. Just go to Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar and check it out, the products that they have from We Buy Black. Also, too, they have there at Wadada's the Afroletics, the athletic sportswear with the African themes of the Zulus, the Dogon Star Seed, the Rebels, the Herus, the Moors, the Olmecs. I'm telling you, it's real cool stuff. In fact, I got a Marcus Garvey shirt and an Ankh hat. That's right. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics. Every Thursday night, Us Lifting Us, the Thursday night broadcast at 9 p.m. And you can go to blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win, and that's Us Lifting Us from 9 p.m. The number to call, to listen, or to make comments or questions is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sanjay-Haiti.org. That's Sister Gabrielle Aurelia in Haiti doing outstanding work in the rural area in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Please check her out. Please, if you really check her out and you love what she's doing, please support the program, working with young kids in education, health, with health care, and sustainable agriculture and entrepreneurship. It's happening right there. They're doing it, and they deserve to be supported. That's Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Ackerman Institute. Brothers and sisters, Baba Baruti and his lovely wife, Ya Baruti, have been educating our young warriors. They deserve to be supported. Brothers and sisters, make a check or money order out to Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, use the dollar sign, the letters YAA, the letter M, and then the letter Baruti, the letters for Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. That is PayPal and Cash App. Also, too, the Ackerman Institute's 6th Annual Complementarity Conference will be Saturday, July 18th, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, and it's going to be an online program. Once to begin a virtual program, Baba Baruti and his lovely wife have been doing these programs now for the last month. No, actually, almost since we have been in quarantine, since the COVID-19 serious outbreak, the pandemic, and so they're doing it again. On Saturday, July 18th, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., the Complementarity Conference online, $10 per person, Complementarity. All right. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. June 21st, any people who would endure all that brutalization and keep together, who could undergo such dismemberment and resuscitate itself, and who endure until it could take the initiative in achieving its own freedom is obviously more than the sum of its brutalization. Ralph Ellison. The spirits of our dead are back. We have demanded them. We have called them. Some of us unwittingly, some consciously, all desperately. But however done, we have called forth their power, their fierce resilience, their anger, and their blood. We call out from Urugu's cultural wilderness because we are lost and must find our way home, or we will surely die. I repeat, we call out from the European, the Caucasian, the white man, Urugu, his culture, the wilderness, his cultural wilderness, because we are lost and we must find our way home or we will surely die. Our ancestors are our umbilical cord to the Creator and to the universe. When we study our cultural traditions, rename ourselves, claim our space, practice ritual, pour libation, call forth the power of our ancestors, we gather them into our souls. The ancestors cannot help us if we refuse to think for ourselves as African. Calling is a spiritual thing. It connects us with our past, present, and future. We should always speak through the wisdom and a vision of the ancestors. Imprisoned Africans look through their bars, searching the night sky for freedom. Africans on deserted islands obtain solace and hope, studying the horizon from dusk till dawn. From dawn to dusk till dawn. Africans surviving a European chaos must seek guidance from the ancients in their struggle to deliver their descendants from evil. Africans must know themselves in order to give their children living images of African power. Affirm, I am so much more than the sum of others' brutalization of me. Affirm, I am so much more than the sum of others' brutalization of me. June 22nd. It took sheer determination to be able to run 100 yards and remember all the mechanics that go along with it. It takes sturdy nerves and being a fighter to stay out there. Wilma Rudolph. We speak in honor of those African warrior scholars who have consistently proven their worth. We speak in honor of those at whose feet we humbly sit and study so that we can learn how to be the warrior of our people. We speak in honor of those Jeknak. Remember, Jeknak and Jedna is the word we should use for mentors and mentor. We should not use the word mentor. We should use Jegna. We should not use the word mentors. We should use Jeknak. We speak in honor of those Jeknak who know no other way than our ancestors, who have done and continue to do all and more in their power to confront, battle, and destroy any who would take the knowledge of the third eye from our children. We speak in honor of those who unhesitatingly fight, and will forever do battle for us simply because we are their people, our children, and their children. Our spirits are one. We speak in honor of those who have unerringly paved the way on the battlefield, who made a way when we could not see for our ignorance and near comatose submission, who stood alone when we were there too afraid or too ignorant to answer the war horn. This praise song is for those who, since consciousness, have not committed treason against our ancestors, who have consistently stayed on the revolutionary path of deeply dedicated, uncompromising warrior scholar who honor our ancestors through everything they say and everything they do. Affirm, I honor those African warrior scholars who have proven their worth. Affirm, I honor those African warrior scholars who have proven their worth. Brothers and sisters, the Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yeah. Yeah, I hope you had a good weekend this past weekend. It was a lot of events happening. Hope you were, you know, being cautious and protected. As you see, there's a serious bump in the coronavirus. Just like somebody said, and one piece I've seen says, hey, what happened to coronavirus? And the brother said, oh, man, it's halftime, man. Racism is performing at halftime. We'll get back to this. It's just halftime. It's racism. And bam, halftime's over. Coronavirus is hitting hard. It's hitting hard. Because the ideal, because of the ideal of this country's mantra, freedom, individualism, materialism, greed, and violence, you know. So when the society says everyone must wear a mask, no, I don't need really no mask. You can't tell me what to do. I don't want no mask. Believe me, if everybody in this society wore a mask, everybody in this society tried their best to practice those safe distances, if everybody in the society were very conscious of where they go and what they do, they could have closed this country down in a month, one solid month, and this problem would have been ended here in this country. I can't speak. Because like right now, Brazil is, well, the president of Brazil is to the right of Donald Trump. And so he's intentionally killing them people. Because most of the people who are dying are African. Brazilian Africans. There's a lot of Africans in Brazil. In fact, there's more Africans in the country, in the South American country of Brazil, than in any other country except Nigeria. So he could care less about the Africans and the poor in Brazil. But here in this country, with the multitudes and variances of people with money and no money, being African and non-African or being whatever, you know. And so this is not going to look good. It's not going to look good. Some argue there may be 200,000 dead by October. By the time the presidential election rolls around again, or the main election, November, by the time early November rolls around, well over 200,000 people dead. And theoretically, unless Joe Biden just can't talk, just can't remember nothing, that's truly, you know, senility and Alzheimer's and all kinds of stuff has messed this man up, then to me, the Democrats could just pick up anybody, and, as far as I'm concerned, and beat Donald Trump as bad as this man has been, when you have the number of Republicans who are coming out against him. Now that you have John Bolton's book out claiming how terrible this man is. But there's still, you know, just like his core. Now, somebody told me this about what happened this past weekend. What happened was a number of teenager young people went online, if that's whatever, how it was done to make the Trump campaign think there was, you know, 800,000 people wanting tickets for this weekend's event. And I'm quite sure he was so excited, you know. The arena holds 19,000. Then they had an overflow area with a big screen and probably had concessions and so forth, all that prepared and waiting. They had to take it down even before his address to the and of course, that was whack. So instead of 19,000, the Tulsa, Oklahoma Fire Department, I don't know why they do it, but anyway, they said that he only had 6,200, a third, two-thirds of the arena was empty. Yes, he spoke for 2 hours, ridiculously stupid stuff. You know, and they mentioned that, in fact, that he was joking when, trying to be funny. That's one thing that dude is not. He's not. Because he has no soul. He's not humor. He doesn't have humor. He's humorless. You know? But supposedly he was joking when he said, yeah, we tested these people, and that's why the number's so high. I told him to stop with the testing. Don't test them. Well, if you don't test them, you'll never know how many people that do have it. And then, of course, the people that do have it will eventually come to a point that they are so sick that when they do go to the hospital and take those, they'll definitely probably need a respirator and they'll probably die. And that's just how deep that is. So, no, you need to test. But some of the people like myself, I don't get no test. One of my good friends got a test. He was negative, of course. But some people want to find out, do I have coronavirus or not? You know, I can understand that. You know, but no. Mm-mm. And so he's thoroughly angry. Then Bolton's book comes out. Oh, man. The two court cases, the two Supreme Court cases, the one with DACA. You know, I know he was mad about that. Yeah. And then the other one that happened, you know, he was angry about that. I think what he should do is resign. Don't even run. You know? Let the Republican Party pick somebody to run against Biden. He should resign. Or have Pence step up. I don't know. I don't care, really. I really don't. I don't. I think that, you know, no matter how more... I don't know how I put this, because to me it's not conscious. But to me, you know, the country, you know, they're removing images that have been basically iconic. You know, Uncle Ben's rice, although they did put Ben Carson on the box. Uncle Ben's rice, Aunt Jemima, you know. Eskimo pies, anything they thought was. So now is the Washington football team going to change? Oh, if that happens, we know it's serious. Are the Atlanta Braves, the Cleveland Indians, are they going to change? I know years ago, even when I was in school, there were issues of schools having indigenous people or Native American symbols, names, caricatures, and so forth. You know, the Custer High School, named after, of course, General Armstrong Custer. Now the school has been renamed. In fact, the school has been divided, and part of it is Obama. George Armstrong Custer's, name of that school. And they were called the Custard Indians. The Custard Indians. Well, of course, Custer got dusted. But the point I'm making, for me, as a Pan-Africanist, it doesn't make any difference what these folks do. The most important thing is we got to get out. We cannot live peacefully in this system. I know that everybody on ESPN was, I mean, some of the announcers were just lividly upset about the noose that was found in Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace made the push for NASCAR to stop promoting the rebel flag and how offensive the flag is. NASCAR agreed. Many of the ride drivers, there was one Caucasian who said that he wasn't going to participate anymore. And everybody said, at least everybody. But NASCAR said, okay, cool, later for you. Because they're saying, we're doing this, we're barring the Confederate flag. And so they had a plane with a message said, defund NASCAR. Rebel, big rebel flag, can't miss it. Flying around over the raceway. In Talladega. It was in Talladega, Alabama. It was in Talladega. And saying, you know, that we can't have this, you know. And so NASCAR said, yeah, no, we will. We're going to eliminate the Confederate flag. Now, if somebody brings it in and waves it, I don't know how that's going to work and how that is, but they said officially a flag that has been associated with NASCAR, because the idea of NASCAR was the good old boys, you know, from back in the Dukes of Hazzard Dukes of Hazzard series. And the idea was the whole idea was, when it came out about NASCAR, was moonshining. Was moonshining. Somebody in the still and way back in the woods, and they get all the bottles together, and then they run from that point to where they had to drop it off. And then, of course, they souped the cars up. They were regular cars. They said, how can we make them faster so they could outrace the police? Outrage the police. They're cars that are in stock. And you know what in stock means? We have them available. So these were the regular cars. And then they souped them up. And then later they started racing them. That's what they call a stock car race. These are regular cars that you and I could buy, but not these cars, because these cars have been deeply modified. So now when you see these races, you understand. Ford and Chevy and so forth. And so NASCAR said, no, we're not having it no more. And so Bubba Wallace, you know, so they hung a noose in his work area. You know, let me just say this. I don't think that what needs to happen, and let me be clear, that what needs to happen, if there's sincere effort on the part of Europeans, on the part of Caucasians, on the part of white folks, to really make this country what they say it is, then there's got to be redistribution of wealth. You cannot say we're going to do all these things and leave the economic disparity that is so damn deep, that continues on unabated. You cannot, if you're really talking about doing something like that. And so therefore, and even if they did, I'm saying it this way for me and what I promote on this program. Whether they do it or not, we have to get out. The fact of the matter is, Malcolm said it best, of all our studies, history is most qualified to reward our research. Look at the history of what these Caucasians have done. Look what they have done to us. Look at every time there was some dealings with us and them. And even though back in ancient times, in ancient Kemet, the Greeks came and studied at the feet of African people and later came back as conquerors and pledgers and thieves. But the culture was so deep, they just didn't rip it off. They wanted to be Kemetic people. They wanted to be, as they say, Egyptian. And so therefore, that's why for over centuries, many Caucasians believe ancient Egyptians were Caucasian. They refused to believe that the ancient Kemetic people were African. They were black. They refused. Even to this day, even to this very day in 2020, and damn it, if it was 2021, it'd be the same thing, or 2030. My point clearly is there is no reforming. There is no changing. There might be a modification here or there. There might be, of course, what has been for many, many years, the illusion of inclusion. But it's not going to happen. And I know at this very moment, as they demonstrate and the fact that many Caucasians, even around the world, I had to laugh when I heard that the Germans in Germany demonstrating said Black Lives Matter. Yeah. They saying Black Lives Matter. So, I put no faith whatsoever. And you know what? Rescue me if I'm wrong. But I put no faith whatsoever in Caucasians being honest and committed to equality across the board. Because that's what needs to happen. You just can't have, oh, we got equality now. But yet, economically, it is so out of whack, it's ridiculous. The economic divide is so deep that it would take that it would take Caucasians' economics being frozen. They can't get any beyond the point where they are. And then ours being elevated in whatever percent it might be. Obviously, it's a huge percent, then the time will be decreased. Because it is said that it would take over 230 years before there's economic equality. That's ridiculous. When Caucasians say to you, yes, a Caucasian with a high school dropout can make as much as a black with a college degree. Probably the most educated degreed people in this country right at this moment is sisters, American African women. Now, I've always said that in that respect, Caucasians, who are the job givers, we are the job seekers. And who we seek jobs from can't stand our ass. But American African women, they're not fearful. The greatest threat, because who controls it? Caucasian men. The greatest threat to them is African men. That's why it is their duty to subject us to being second-class citizens, to subject us to all of the depravity, all of the lack of ability to move and to have latitude and to move up and to get jobs in a good neighborhood and so forth, all of that. Yeah. Because they don't want it. The whole idea of us being equal to them is repulsive to them because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior and there's nothing that you can do or say to prove otherwise. And if there's a plethora of information to prove otherwise, and there is, we reject it. We ignore it. We dismiss it. Because this is who we are. So, you may think that that's what this is moving to, that the world is moving to a sense of let's have a better world where human beings will be respected for who they are and the cultures they have and the belief that no one culture is more dominant than another. And that if we can help another culture, we have an obligation to do so because we are human and they are human. I know a lot of our people are hoping that because that's easy. That's easy. Because we'll just settle on in. Won't be no problem. We'll just settle in, you know. How easy is that? And of course, the idea of what Dr. King was saying, little black boys and little black girls will be playing with little white boys and little white girls. They'll be talking about free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we's free at last. I'm sorry, brothers and sisters, and this is just based upon what I know, what I've seen, what I've read. It's not going to happen. I know there are many of us, particularly in Christian religion, because Christian religion has been impacted on us by Caucasians. It's dominated, controlled by Caucasians, and the religion tells us and makes us want to believe that. But really what the religion does, it makes us believe in hereafter. It makes us believe that this world is what it is and it is evil. But don't fret. Don't challenge it. Just live your life because and believe in Jesus. Go to church. Tithe. Make the preacher rich and believe in Jesus. And then when you die, when you expire, you go to heaven. You go to heaven. And then you have received your reward. Now, okay, I know, we know that Caucasians, particularly those who say themselves as Christians, have amassed huge amounts of wealth. The Catholic Church and what it has done, it could pay off all those people who they have abused, but they had to protect themselves. And the Catholic Church still, when the priest is found out, they still move him somewhere else, as opposed to when a priest is found out, oh, we're getting rid of you and we are going to prosecute you for being a pedophile. We're going to prosecute you. See, because those dudes didn't have no calling from God to be a priest. They wanted to mess with young boys, and boy, what a way to do it. I go through this thing about being a priest and go to the seminary or the cemetery. Go to the seminary, and I go through all of that. And now I'm, you know, hooked up with a church and a congregation or a parish. No, I'm telling you, it seems like it's either us or them. And and they've made that world. They've made that world since they started. Now, of course, after the Roman Empire started to fall, they retreated back into Europe and they lived in a medieval or what they call a medieval or dark age, ruled by the church. Church came up with an idea called purgatory and said to you, well, you know, your mama and your daddy who just deceased, you know, they're up in limbo. They're in purgatory. And I think if you want them to, you know, go to heaven, you're going to have to come up with some you know, more grain or a couple of more pigs or whatever it was that the church thought or deemed to be valuable for them, for your descendant, for your family to move up into heaven because they were in purgatory. Islam spreading over North Africa. Some Africans in the western part of Africa, looking African, because Islam, just like Christianity, was forced. It was forced. And so those men and women who were forced to be Muslims, many of them, they were called Moors. The Moors went into Europe from the northern part of Africa. There's a little waterway called the Strait of Gibraltar that puts you in Spain, Portugal area, and they dominated Spain and the Portugal area for 700 years. Europe in that dark age, the only light that was happening was the Moors. And we studied at their feet. They studied at our feet again. They studied at our feet in Kemet, and they studied at our feet again. And still, they don't understand the study to be human. When they studied at our feet, it wasn't about them developing the mindset to be human, because it's never in them. So they took that information that was given in Europe. And Europe came out of that dark age. Men like Charlemagne, that's why, I don't know why that brother wants to call himself Charlemagne, the great, the God, man. Charlemagne, Martel, and many others, they came to the fore. They kicked the Moors out of Spain. 1492 was a deep year, because that's when supposedly the Moors were exited out of Spain, as well as the Sephardic Jews. And of course, in 1492, Columbus does what he does. And of course, there were other explorers who went other places. And then it all began. It all began. And that's when Europeans started venturing out, taking everybody's stuff in the name of, I claim you. They didn't, when they ventured out, brothers and sisters, they didn't come to bargain. They didn't come to trade. They didn't come to buy or sell. They just came to take. I claim this in the name of. And the fact that human beings outside of Europeans, outside of Caucasians, are welcoming people, they're xenophilic. Europeans are xenophobic. And this is what Dr. Shikanta Jop was talking about in his two cradle theory of human development, because of how they developed in the region of the world that was at one time, you know, an icebox, a literal icebox, and how they had to develop, how their body shapes, how their facial features, how their internal organs, all those things were changed to adapt to this seriously cold environment that they were in. But what it also made them was selfish and greedy and sexist and mean-spirited and evil. That's why their gods that they created aren't loving. They're revengeful. They're wrathful. It's like, when I was telling my brother, I said, man, what's up with the Moses story? Damn, why couldn't God, you know, lighten his heart? No, his heart was hardened. Well, damn. You know, I take, you know, that God did this. Yeah, supposedly God did it, right? Through Moses. God turned the Nile River red with blood. God put all those plagues on them. Really? What a terrible ass God that is. I don't want to fear God. I want to love God. And I want God to love me and inspire and motivate me. I don't want to fear him. I want to worship him. I want God that speaks to me, that brings me knowledge. I don't want a God that I got to just wrathful and vengeful, that I got to fear. We're going to take a break. We come back from the break on. It's Africa's turn. It's Africa's turn. We'll talk more about it. I got a little piece that somebody sent me. I really like it because, you know, it kind of explains where Africa is. That's why I'm saying to us, we as African people know we're not all going to go. There are a lot of us that are going to stay here. More of us are going to stay here than are going to leave. Even African mindset individuals, conscious mindset individuals are going to stay here. But for those of us who want to repatriate, for those of us who want to help the African continent be one, develop a united African states, to control all the resources and all the things that could happen, that are going to happen in the future for Africa. And even though that hopefully would be the case, the ones that have stayed supported, the ones that stayed are not trying to sabotage. They're not agent provocateurs. They send money. They help out. They don't speak against. That's what needs to happen. So we'll talk more when we come back after the break. Africa, it's your turn. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. This evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming. And then right after that, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Friday. Then on Saturdays at 4 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition from 4 to 6, followed by Black Reality Think Tank, the Sankofa. That's the word I was trying to think about, brother and sister. The Sankofa Ancestor Circle with Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Sunday at 7 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I saw this piece, and I wanted to speak on it. In fact, I want to read it. It's Baba Baruti and it's complementarity and why it's necessary in light of Black Lives Matter. Last week, I talked about Black Lives Matter. We went to their website and they told us what they think about Black Lives Matter and what they're about. And it didn't seem like it was all about, you know, really Black lives that mattered. Because by that I mean, they ain't talking about men or boys. The male entity is, you know, not dealing with it. But we need each other, Black men and Black women. See, that's the thing. So Black Lives Matter can be what it is. And they can get all the money that they can. And they can have Caucasians all around the damn globe. But it's not Black family. It's not Black people. It's not really Black lives. The couple, a brother and a sister, a male and a female, the couple is the bedrock of the nation. Without it, there is no family, no people. Without couples, there can be no family to procreate and rear confident, untroubled, anchored children. No viable, no visible community-respecting generations can be born to continue the process of life, of living, building, and defending. African couples must be whole, individually and as one. They must be able to trust themselves and each other implicitly. And that is what makes it imperative that we carefully choose our mates for African reasons. We must choose with vision, for we are the vanguard. Our unions have purpose far greater than the wants or needs of either member individually or the couple together. We do not bemoan this privilege. In fact, it is just the opposite. We are soldiers in love with forming a beautiful family, rearing happy, thinking children, building strong, lasting communities, raising a mighty nation, and removing all enemies. For African warrior scholars, compliments, there is no other reason for being. Ashe. Ashe. There is no other reason for being. And that's why we do this program. Africa. It's your turn. This piece I'm going to play for you, you know, it's what I've been saying all the time about Africa. It's time for Africa to wake up. It's time for Africans to go help Africa in terms of all that needs to be done.
Africa, it's your turn. You have a $7 trillion economy represented by 54 countries and 1.3 billion people with an average age of just 18 years. Africa, it's your turn. Half of the gold ever mined on Earth comes from your womb. You are the world's largest platinum producer. You have the world's second largest diamond reserves. And you have enough minerals to feed the whole world. Africa, it's your turn. You host 6 of the 10 fastest growing economies in the world. You will have a labor force of over 1 billion workers by the year 2030, bigger than any other continent. You will be the fastest urbanizing continent from 2020 to 2050. Africa, it's your turn. You have 60% of the world's unfarmed arable land, 30% of the world's natural resources, and 12% of the world's oil. Africa, it's your turn. Because you are the world's youngest population by over 10 years, you will soon have the world's fastest growing education sector. Now, what does that mean? It means you are training the world's biggest labor force, building the world's fastest growing real estate industry, developing the world's most robust industrial movement, clothing the world's fastest growing fashion industry, and producing food for the world's biggest FMCG sector. Africa, it's your turn. With the fourth industrial revolution spreading like a wildfire throughout the continent, Africa is the world's fastest growing online community. In 2013, you had 167 million internet users. This number is expected to be over 600 million people by 2025 and over 1 billion people by year 2035. More than half of Africa's population will be online by year 2030. This will translate to accelerated economic growth in other sectors as digital transformation spreads rapidly across all industries. In 2020, Africa is already producing mobile apps, electric buses, drones, artificial intelligence technologies, and smart services. Africa, it's your turn. It's your turn to build. It's your turn to innovate. It's your turn to manufacture and to create. It's your turn to believe in your own greatness, to buy your own products, to export more than you import, to produce more than you consume. Africa, it's your turn. It's your turn to lead and not to follow, to trade by your own terms, to play by your own rules, to create your own solutions that will solve your own problems. Africa, it's your turn to write your own history, to tell your own stories in your own languages and for your own descendants. Africa, it's your turn to fill stadiums for your own musicians, to download their songs and compositions by the millions, to support your own sports teams and wear their jerseys more frequently than you wear those from overseas. Africa, it's your turn to fund your own movies and give them budgets they can work with so they will write scripts that inspire dreams and show your teens possibilities that exist beyond their current realities. Africa, it's your turn to reward your own excellence, to encourage your own risk takers, and to help them rise from their failures, to create your own platforms where greatness can be mass produced. Africa, Africa, it's your turn to see, to pursue, and to achieve.
to unite, to partner, and to trade beyond regional borders, to believe in each other more than another, to stand for Africa, and to make her prosper. Africa, it's your turn.
Right, brothers and sisters, it's Africa's turn. That means it's our turn. You just heard the wealth that Africa has. That is ours. We're African. That is ours. And ideally, what needs to happen is that Africans prepare themselves to go home. To work with Africans. Yes, I know they have been fed the lies that, you know, that we think we're better than them because we grew up here in America. Or we've been fed the lie that they think they're better than us because they weren't enslaved but yet colonized. Damn it, let me just say this. Clearly, bump all that madness. The bottom line. If Africa and Africans are going to be viable in this century and beyond, it's imperative that Africans come together, that Africans unify. You know the model of this program, right? Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. That's it. Either we do this or we don't. Because if we don't, we won't exist. The only place, and I know I just saw a piece for Republic of New Africa, Rethink. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know, I guess because of what's happening in there. The Caucasians are willing to do this. They're willing to take down statues. They're willing to do this, that, and the other. Let me just say this. They ain't willing to give us no damn five states and say, that's where y'all go. And I'm going to tell you, we can't live in an environment. We can't live in an area. We can't live in a country where there is an open and sworn enemy of African people. They just didn't say it. They've shown it. They have proven who they are. They have proven. But yet, here it is. I just played for you all the things that Africa has. That it needs nothing from no one. All it needs is us as human beings of African descent to come home and help build. Africa needs highways. Africa needs cities and subdivisions. Africa needs railroads. Africa needs ports. Africa needs hospitals. Africa needs schools. Africa needs all of the things that will make us players in the world instead of the pawns we have been. Africa needs us, not just American Africans, not just diasporan Africans.
Africa needs strong-minded Africans on the continent and throughout this planet to come home and to build. To build family. We need men to step up to be men and women to do likewise and come together to build family. To rear solid, good children who are knowledgeable of who they are and their responsibility to continue to strive to do good in the world. Africa, it's your turn. Africans in the diaspora, it's your call. It's your call. It's time to go home. We have been here a long time, and we have tried. Lord knows we have tried. I was in a discussion one time with a guy talking about the Civil War. The Civil War is at the end. We fought for you to be, so that you wouldn't be a slave. What? If you cats fought for us, and we fought too for us, not to be enslavement anymore, then why do Caucasians, period, no matter if it's the North, if it's the South, if it's the Confederacy or the Union, if it's city or suburb or country or rural, whatever, why do Caucasians treat us the way they do? So then did they really fight a civil war to end our captivity? Only in the respect of economics. You had an emerging industrialization of the North against a free labor economy of the South. Lincoln said, if I could solidify the Union without freeing these folks, I'd do so. I'd do it. He was no favorite of African people. I, as much as any man, is having the superior position assigned to the white race. That's his words. After this so-called ending, how are we treated? How are we treated in the North, in the South, in any damn other direction in America, in the United States, hell, in America? Canada too. That's why it's our turn. The most, and let me just say this. We've had our turn a number of times. And we showed the world the compassion and the beauty and the glory of African people coming, who have came together to create and to build. To have the kind of knowledge that built on a grand scale and in ancient times that was so mind-boggling, mind-blowing. Can you imagine people hearing about ancient Kemet in the worlds in which they lived? There was hardly any buildings, hardly anything. Whatever they built their homes with, whatever that might have been, whatever materials it was. But when they came into Kemet, they seen stone. Carved, shaped. They seen a civilization that was one to be marveled, to be idolized. And the European wanted to be that. We've done it before, and we must do it again. Our very survival as African people depends on it. Our very survival as a family unit depends on it. We will have all of the riches of the planet. We wouldn't have to ask anybody for a damn thing. We would have all that we need. We would go outside just to look at for others. We would go to Europe, maybe to whether other parts. Come here to the United States and take a damn tour, whatever. If that's what we wanted to do, but because basically what we have at home is so much better than anywhere else. Believe me, it can be that. It will be that because it should. It must be that because we're going to make it. These things that I'm talking about, brothers and sisters, what I just played for you. Is real. The development of it doesn't happen because we want it to, or hope it to, or wish it to. It happens because we made it. We made it happen. We came together and we strive to make it happen. So it's Africa's time. It's our time. Let me get a caller in and get this conversation going. 404-453. Good afternoon. Just want to listen. Okay, that's cool. Okay. But that's what's happening. When a few more folks jump on, I'll take a call. But that is what it is, brothers and sisters. And if we don't understand that, I know the reason why we don't is because we've been whitewashed. The European still has the vice grip on our mind. And he's tightening it. And he's giving you an illusion with all of this. Tear the symbol. That's symbolism without substance, brothers. I don't give a damn about a statue. I don't give a damn about a damn statue. Is there fairness? Is there equity? You know, are they doing things righteously? That's what I care about. They don't give a damn about no damn statue. Yes, I understand these are symbols of the wickedness and individuals of the wickedness. You know, Cecil Rhodes, Robert E. Lee. What was that Caucasian's name? Who was the gynecologist that developed so many instruments by working on our sisters? Man, he was an evil man. Worked on them without any anesthetic. Just an evil man. He had a statue. I remember a piece a number of years ago with these sisters with, you know, near their vagina area, they would have all these stains of blood and so forth, protesting against this man. I'm telling you, I have a caller here, 447-447-960. 447, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Everybody listening to this around the world, good afternoon, good morning to you, Baba Ochi.
Yes, sir. How you doing, man? How you doing, Brother Paul? How's it going?
Well, I've got air in my lungs and my heart is beating, so I know I'm alive.
I know that's right.
So if I'm alive, I've got to do better, and better I shall do, Brother Ochi.
That's right. Every time you have a chance, you always have a chance to do better. And so you take the reins and you try your best to do that. I agree.
Absolutely. So today I'm trying to reach out to my family across the pond, as they like to describe it, and just supply some information. I don't know if you're aware that Lloyd's of London have recently put out a news report talking about paying reparations. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not. I think I saw something on there, but I haven't got into that in depth. I know Lloyd's of London, that's what made a lot of folks rich, because they were the ones that were insuring the human cargo coming out of Africa to the Americas and to wherever else, you know?
Absolutely. Lloyd's of London today are one of the biggest insurance companies on the platform, on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made that statement, along with some other companies, one company called Green King or something like that, but I know that they're good for. is supplying beer. They're one of the biggest publicans, as we call it, or pubs, and pub suppliers. And they also are talking about paying reparations.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we are the we are the so-called conscious people, and we don't just go along to get along, and we analytically think and analyze things. And
good.
I think when we look at this picture and this statement, all of a sudden out of the blue, as you rightfully says, one company who was in debt up to their knees in rape, torture, pillage, kidnapping the children from Africa and shipping them abroad, all of a sudden decide that they want to pay reparations. But I feel that this is a sleight of hand trick, because we see these so-called Black Lives Matters movements going around the world and creating this picture where they suggest that as their mantra goes, Black Lives Matter, pulling down statues, so on and so forth. But there's another company, there's another group, I should say, which is, I don't know if you've heard of them, Antifa?
Yeah, that's the anti-fascist group. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It's the anti-fascist group. In fact, here in this country, they have been accused of being the ones that have started pretty much the riot. The destruction, not the demonstrations. They're the ones that throwing the bricks. In fact, I seen one photo. I don't know if it was Photoshop or not, but there was a pile of bricks, and they were handing bricks out to people. You know. So, and then of course the death of the brother here in Atlanta, the person who set the Wendy's drive-through restaurant on fire is alleged to be Antifa.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're getting this information that these groups, and we've got the names of these groups, and when we go on their websites, we can see the purpose and what's behind these groups. So we can call them, for the sake of argument, a Leninist Marxist movement,
mm-hmm.
hidden behind something called Black Lives Matter, which we really know is the LGBTQ movement.
Right.
So, you know, we've got to wake up, my brother, Baba Ocean. We've got to wake up, because mm-hmm. I think we're being played. We're being used.
Yeah.
We're being used for political purposes, because it all rolls back to this left-wing, right-wing agenda. And the left fighting the right and the right fighting the left for power and political control, and we are just a vehicle to get that. So all of a sudden, we hear Lloyd's of London talking about paying reparations, but who are they paying reparations to? Are they going to pay reparations for this thing called Black Lives Matter? Is that what they're going to pay reparations to?
Hell no.
Well, that's the trick, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they want to pay reparations, and, you know, we've had groups and organizations beating at their doors for years, and they just tend to ignore proper black groups, African-centered groups, banging down their doors, marching up and down the streets. But they just tend to ignore these groups. And all right. of a sudden, this Black Lives Matter movement comes along, financed by who we know. Mm-hmm. And they then just come out of the blue, we're going to pay rich. So we know that we're being hoodwinked and bamboozled. But what are we going to do about it, Baba Oshie?
Well, let me think. I'm going to tell you what I feel that we should do about it. We should become stronger as an African people, as Pan-Africanists. We should come stronger, and we should begin to link up globally and challenge Black Lives Matter, or just really put them on front, because you're right. That's what they are. They're in fact, to me, Black Lives Matter is anti-African, because African is family. African is man and woman, and offspring, and community, you know? Because when I read Black Lives Matter, and I read it over the air for the last two programs, Friday and Wednesday, or it might have been Monday and Wednesday, whatever, I stated that this program, Black Lives Matter, is more concerned with women and alternative gender, whatever, transgender, They're more concerned with that than, in fact, they even say in their what they believe, that they don't want to deal with the usual structure of a nuclear family that the Western society puts out of a man, a domineering man and a woman who works in the home and stays. They say they don't want that. See, they would rather, you know, have men excluded. And that's not us. So that's not Black Lives Matter. It's disguised as Black Lives Matter, and it's abuse. But everybody's saying it. The world is saying it. Black Lives Matter. See?
There's another thing I want to put out there, Father Ochi. You're familiar with the organization called CARICOM?
No.
CARICOM is an organization set up in the Caribbean. It's an organization, it's a political organization headed by political leaders in the Caribbean and academics. And they have been pushing towards reparations, pushing the UK government for reparations for transatlantic slavery. But I just want to put this out there, yeah? Most of us right down here in the UK are from the Caribbean and West Africa. And I'd just like to say this. Although they put, I think it's a 10-point plan, to the UK government towards reparations, most of us at the grassroots, those of us who call ourselves conscious, we don't agree with their 10-point plan. Because in their 10-point plan, they talk about working with certain organizations within government, in the UK government. And to us who are born in this country, UK, and have experienced what goes on within the UK in terms of education, in terms of the social organizations, et cetera, we have had a first-hand experience of how these people operate. So, you know, we some of us feel it's a bit rich for those of us, for them in the Caribbean, from the place where our parents came from, to be speaking on our behalf as if to say, suggest we don't exist. So we have movements here, reparation movement, which actually goes out every 1st of August, and petitions against the government to bring a question in Parliament as towards reparations as we see it. And I know that organization headed by Esther Jose Stanford is in touch with your grassroots organization right there in America, COBRA. So what I'm saying is, and I want to make it clear, that this organization called CARICOM, speaking on behalf of the Caribbean, does not represent everybody from the Caribbean or have heritage from the Caribbean, because... And I would like, we have an activist here called Cecil Gutsmore, and I kindly and humbly ask if you could make time to listen to what he says. He's more of the expert, and he has a better understanding of what's going on in the Caribbean. But I think people need to know.
Well, then do this. Let's try to get him on the program to try to set that up. I would love that.
That would be a beautiful thing.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be a beautiful thing because, we've got to get this information out there, yeah? Because the situation as we've seen it, what Cecil would, one of the things he raises, and I learned this myself, is the Marmars, about the Marmar struggle in Kenya. When they were seeking independence, the British army went down there to quash the uprisings, and a lot of them were killed and murdered down there. And the elders, more recently in the last 10 years, have brought cases against the British government in the High Court in this country. But what we saw happen was, although they were asking for reparations and compensation for the loss of the people during that event, the British government, they did win their case. But what we saw happen is that they didn't get the full entitlement of the money. Most of the money went to the organizations which were representing them, which came from Britain itself, i.e. the lawyers and the so-called activists right here, and they get a lot little of the winning. Yeah, and we don't want to see that happen again. We don't want people who call themselves our leaders speaking on behalf of our, deciding that they know better than us, and going forth, and because I've been following this thing for a long time, and I sure. know that they are going to pay reparations. They will, but they are setting us up so that that money goes back to their own people. Their agents.
Yeah. Let me say this about the reparations for African people. Not for me. I've never advocated money. And I understand there's a lot of us here in the Caribbean and in the diaspora who have been affected by what Europeans have done to us. And they would like to have some personal, wealth or some personal money that would come to them in light of what has happened to their to their forefathers, you see. And so I understand that. But for me, reparations is about repair of us as a people, repair our culture, repair our institutions, or build new institutions. That's what reparations means to me. It's not just some money. I mean, right now, if reparations would give, particularly to American Africans, to us, and because of the mindset that we have, Europeans would get that money back in less than a year. In fact, reparations would really just be a stimulus program that they gave us this money. And next thing, because with the mindset that we have, we wouldn't trust one another to come together and pull that money together to build institutions, to build educational institutions, to build some training institutions, to even build a factory or whatever. Because in this society, you're thought to care about you and yours and to hell with everybody else.
No, you know what? I think it's the some of the leading grassroots movement here. They go on this premise of Professor Kwesi of Nigeria, and I think that's similar to the organization there in Kroba. But for me personally, having studied law, for me personally, that's not practical, because I know that you can't go in a court and ask for it to be repaired. It's just you can't do that. It's, you know what I mean? And all reparations really is under international law. It's a remedy for wrongdoing. But if you take that to the civil level, you cannot go into the court and say to the court, repair you, or ask to be repaired. It doesn't happen. They have to give you something practical. So no matter how we talk, for me, this is how I understand it, and my understanding of law. If whatever decision is being made, it still has to boil down to something practical. Whether you ask for institutions, that's all good, or whatever. But the individual has to benefit. So that those who are deciding these things, I know that the person who's heading it is actually doing a bachelor's or something in law. Yeah, I understand that. But from my understanding of law, I've got a degree in law. Mm-hmm. That's not how I see it. And I spent many times in courts, and I don't understand it like that, because I don't see any court. I mean, just take it down to a logic. Just imagine going into the courts and you're asking for some sort of compensation. You're telling them that you want the opposition to repair you. I mean, that's not going to happen. They're going to laugh. That's just almost laughable. So I'm not knocking, because I haven't studied this thing enough to. Mm-hmm. But in my little understanding of law, right, like I said, I've got a law degree, and I don't see it like that personally. Whatever institution they build or whatever, the individual still has to benefit from something. There has to be some sort of compensation. Unless you're going to build a house for them or something, how do you transfer it? Because we live in a capitalist society. Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work really in practically. Yeah, the one thing I saw, there was a documentary, I think I might have been watching it on YouTube, and it was about Israel. They were talking about how some of some of those people who were being paid reparations weren't getting the money. It was very interesting, because they were showing that some of them were being paid in like a top up in their pensions or whatever, but they weren't receiving it. They were right there in Israel, and I quite learned a lot from that.
So what it was reparations from Germany? Reparations from, I mean, ironically, and you can call it this, what, reparations from the United States? just for being European Jews, because the United States gives the European Jews billions of dollars. Billions.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And how have they done that? I mean, the legal system is, you know, they've organized themselves effective, and they've got in the positions where they've been able to move under the radar and make these things happen. So I think there's a lesson there.
Well, let me
when in my employment, I saw what was going on. I don't want to talk about it too much, but I actually saw exactly what was going on, even in the UK here. So I know how they've maneuvered themselves into those positions. The problem with us, and we know this, Babaji, and I don't need to say, sometimes when we get in them positions, we don't do the things we're supposed to do.
Right.
I've worked with these people, I've seen it. We just don't do the things. And sometimes among us, we work for the impressor more than we work for ourselves. And that's the problem. You know, we just don't do these things.
Yeah.
You know, we educate our children. They go in the positions, but either they're frightened or they're looking after themselves, or it's just me first or whatever. But we don't do the things. They maneuver themselves into position. They put themselves first.
Yeah.
And they give you the impression that they're working for the company. No, they're putting it. And I actually work for companies. I work for people in the UK who were actually part of the Jewish Israeli Forum. They were actually head up, you know, from the UK. So I saw the stuff all coming to the office. I saw it firsthand. I knew exactly what was going on. Just leave it there. So what I'm saying is a lesson to be learned to us.
There's lessons to be learned. That's for sure.
About that, and I'm not arguing against it, but I'm saying that. Practically, there has to be something, or it's just not going to work, really. That's what I've seen, anyway.
Well, let me catch another caller. 646, good afternoon, 646.
Yeah, what's going on, Ochi? How was your Pappy's Day?
Oh, man, it was cool.
What I mean? Was it a good Pappy's Day?
Yeah, it was cool. I'd a Pappy of that, baby. it was cool.
Well, next time, don't have me waiting this long, man. I'm not one to be waiting.
Well, man, you were on and you went off.
Enhance your program.
So you went on, you went off. Like, man, where is Jay at?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just messing with you, man.
I get you.
Oh, right quick, man, listen. You know, they only taking down these statues to placate the fools. People who don't even really know the history of those statues, and just to rile up and upset white folks, you know, to behave in a certain way because they feel and think something has been taken from them. You know, the manipulation of people is no joke. And these devils calculate things to do to rile up these sycophants, racists, to keep them going. But unfortunately, we're not bright enough to understand when we're being played and manipulated.
Yeah.
So, you know, you take this one devil down, and then you put up an appeasement to the devil, and now everything is supposed to be all good. That's why I always say some of our people are just fools. We just don't get it. We like being toyed with. We like being played. We like being manipulated. We like being done dirty. It makes us feel as though we want it. So when they tell me that they're going to take down a statue of that no good, filthy, stinking George Washington, I tell them, why don't you tell the truth about the bastard? If you tell the truth about the bastard, then, you know, it would be what it would be. But now you're going to just take it down, and he's going to go along in history as the so-called founding father and all of this and all of that, when he was a brutal slave master. He was a dog. He was filth. He was a rapist. He was a murderer. He was worthless.
He had wooden teeth.
Because people should see him.
He had wooden teeth.
Well, but what did that tell you? What did he try? What did he do to his slaves? Pull the keys out of their mouth.
Yep.
I mean, come on, man. We just have to stop playing games in these situations and see it for what it's worth. I don't care nothing about you taking down a statue. It don't mean nothing to me. What that gonna do to make my life better? Is it gonna so-called make me feel good? Well, you know what happened with Billy Ray Thornton and Halle Berry. Make me feel good. Come on. Let's stop playing games, please.
Yeah.
Let's stop playing games. And that's the way we have to address this, and that's the way that we have to deal with this, because if we don't, we're just going to be bamboozled, hoodwinked months later, years later.
Yeah.
It's just an extended thing within the minds of these devils that they could just manipulate and use us and make us feel good. Now, I don't want to feel good. No, not that way.
No, not that
but
way.
Keep on doing what you're doing.
All right.
But remember, next time when you see my number, jump right on it, please, baby, because I don't like working. Okay, brother.
All right, Jay. You got any last thing to say there, Paul?
Well, we better not upset Jay, man, because, boy.
No. That's right. Well, listen, Paul.
Hey, the only thing I'll say is, how's Brother Franklin, man? I haven't seen him.
You know what, man? I'm just going to keep it real. I've been trying to call his butt, man.
He
hasn't returned my call, so I'm going to give him a call again. You know, to find out what's going on.
I'll send him a message, man, and I'll say to him, Bob, you know, don't shy away, man.
That's right. Yeah. Don't take your ball and go home. Don't be like that.
Yeah. You keep up the good work, Bob.
Thank you.
And we speak soon.
All right. Thank you, Brother Paul. Thank you. 404-453.
Hey, OG, man. Hey, look here, man. I got so much I want to talk to you about.
But see, now we only got a minute. Now we only got a minute.
Yeah,
I called him you before.
Yeah. Yeah, not today, man. So that's why I don't read today, man.
All right, but listen, you saved that for Wednesday. You saved that for Wednesday.
Yeah,
I got to get up out of here.
Man.
All right. Thanks a lot,
Wes.
All right. Wes. Peace.
I sure will, man. Peace out. Love
all right. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the European, the Caucasian, the white man, the Urugu, is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, I thank you for listening. Be with us on Wednesday. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.